Richard? Is this your coat?
Don't do it.
That guy in a little coat. That guy in a little coat.
Don't.
That guy in a little coat.
Welcome to Double Impact, the podcast where we double back on the movies that impacted us growing up as 90s kids and decide whether they hold up today or are best left in the past. I'm Tristan.
I'm Greg. Welcome back for another week, friends of the show.
Can we say welcome back? Because it seems like a few of you didn't listen last week.
Yeah.
I know I posted the episode a day late. Had some personal affairs that got in the way of editing. I didn't realize.
Sounds classy.
Right? Isn't that classy? I didn't know that was a deal breaker.
Yeah.
How many of you only listen on Mondays? Come on, guy.
Tuesday's also good.
Yeah.
Monday. Yeah, Monday or no day. Okay, that's cool. Mm. I get it.
Monday or bust.
I get it.
Yeah. Sorry, I sound really angry. I'm just puffed out.
You did that. You had to.
I had to walk from the lounge room into here. I was just explaining to Greg off mic that I'm at a hefty weight currently.
Tristan's bulking. He's
107 kilos. I'm nearly.
It's about a deuce and a half.
I'm reaching a Tommy Boy aesthetic.
What is that in pounds?
Like 240? No, 230 or something.
Oh, you're not quite deuce and a half.
Yeah.
Yeah, you're about 240 odd.
Yeah, it's crazy because I'm pretty sure The Rock is like 250.
Mm.
I don't look like The Rock. I look like Mac from that season of Always Sunny where he was bulking.
He was bulking.
And I used to say that to you as a joke at the beginning of this bulking phase. And I've realized I think I had some form of body dysmorphia, which is the inverse of what guys typically get. You know, guys get body dysmorphia where they think they're not big enough all the time.
Mm.
I thought I was like getting, oh yeah, pretty good. You know how you unconsciously prepare yourself to look in the mirror? But then when you catch yourself in the mirror without unexpectedly.
Yeah, and you're sober.
You see how you really look.
Oh, like, yeah, yeah.
Oh,
like,
no.
Like in a car window or something.
Yeah, or a funny like window on a storefront or something.
Or a mirror store.
Those damn mirror stores.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, yeah.
Just a mirror store down on 3rd.
Yeah. And so, you know what? I've got to go to a wedding in about 8 weeks.
Oh, you better believe there'll be a mirror there.
I tried on this coat. I tried on my jacket.
Mm-hmm.
And it was a real fat guy in a little coat scenario.
Oh, way to bring it back.
It really was. It really, really was. I nearly ripped it.
Just wear a dressing gown.
A muumuu.
A muumuu.
With a tie. One of those ones with the tuxedo painted on.
Oh, yeah.
I guess we're here to talk about Tommy Boy, aren't we?
Tommy Boy is a film.
Yeah.
That stars the late, great Chris Farley.
Yep.
And Joe Dirt.
Yeah.
Came out in 1995.
It did come out in 1995. What a year. We did it last week.
Fucking, we did.
Which means Greg had to find a fresh member berry in 2 consecutive weeks for the same year.
Oh, gosh. I tell you what, folks, it's not always easy.
Yeah.
But I've found something that I'd like to talk to you all about.
Mm-hmm.
I thought what we could do is just have a little bit of a comparison with our top 10 songs. For the year.
Mm-hmm.
I've got Australia here.
Okay.
I've got America.
Mm.
I don't have England. Should I get England up?
They're somewhere in between.
We'll get them. England, we'll do you next time.
Yeah.
Next time.
Work your way up. UK, you're 12% of our listeners currently.
Yeah. So you tell your friends when and I'll say, it was Take That. Take That was number one.
Oh, Take That.
Is that Take That?
I don't know.
Boys End. Boys End? Wait, hang on. That's not a band. Boys Own. It
probably is a band.
Take That. Gary Barlow. He was the famous one, but then
was Robbie Williams?
Yeah, but he was the backup guy.
Oh, was he?
Gary Barlow was the main man.
Really?
And then Robbie
Williams. This is like if Michelle Williams became the famous one instead of Beyonce.
Yes.
Wow, I didn't know that.
Yeah.
I didn't know anything about Take That.
Robbie Williams was the little fat backup singer up the back.
And then how did he break out? He just.
Started. Slaying.
Wow.
Okay, I'm going to read the top 10 and then you tell me if this is Australia or America.
Okay.
Is that going to take too long?
Maybe. We'll do top 5.
We'll do top 5.
Okay.
Okay. Number five, On Bended Knee, Boys to Men.
Wow. What a tune.
Number five, Another Night, MC Saar and The Real McCoy.
Yeah, okay. So Bended Knee is US. Why do we have those? Oh, my God. Another night, another dream.
So embarrassing. Okay.
And it takes up – that's in my brain. Seems I didn't ask for it. True. That could be other valuable information in there, but instead I got that fucking
this
song.
Is actually really easy
yeah.
and embarrassing. Number four, Mouth by Beryl Bainbridge.
Okay, yep, that's Australia. Or good song though, by the way. Did I message you the other day? It came on in the car and I added it to my piano list. Because it's good. It's tight.
Okay.
It's a good song. She's what a tight lyricist. Everything fits so neatly.
We're going to move on.
Okay.
We're going to keep it moving. Kiss from a Rose by Seal. I'm going to kiss from the wrong there. Which is which? You already said Meryl's Australia.
Oh, okay.
Australia.
This is still, yeah. Meryl's Australia.
Oh, okay. Correct.
Yeah.
Makes the next one a bit harder though.
Okay.
Number three, Kiss from a Rose, Seal.
Australia.
Hey, America was Creep by TLC.
Those silk pajamas, that was a very special highlight of my crazy video call VHS that I picked up with my birthday money that year.
Oh, yeah. Number two off the same album, Don't Go Chasing Waterfalls.
Don't Go Chasing Waterfalls.
Very popular Instagram subject for when people take a picture of a waterfall, they like to say, don't go chasing waterfalls.
People are clever. They're
or they might say,
clever.
I ignored TLC. Or they might say, chase waterfalls. And they're beautiful.
12 months later, take me back.
Oh.
Take me back.
Take me back. Cry face.
Yeah.
Was Waterfalls number two in Australia or?
What's the other song?
Staying Alive by Entrance. Get forward with the fever on the dance floor.
I guess that was Australia. Entrance. So okay, but Creep, I mean, Waterfalls might have been number one in Australia, is that why?
No.
Because where's Waterfalls? Not in the top five.
Waterfalls was 16 and Creep just didn't rank in Australia.
Fuck, Waterfalls directed by the director of Friday.
That's right.
Gary Gray, F. Gary Gray.
Yeah, it's friend of the show.
Friend of the show.
Both countries have the same number one song. Look, it's Gangster's Paradise, okay?
Number one song in both countries. The song that brought us all together.
I like it at karaoke
when
now.
Coolio didn't know if he would go on to C24 the way things was going, he didn't know.
I don't know. Yeah. Did I ever tell you I thought that was Biggie?
Really?
The guy sitting down singing?
Well, he was a big fella.
And I didn't really know who Biggie was properly then.
Yeah, it was pre-internet, so.
Forgiven.
Yeah. And it's a Stevie Wonder, well, not a sample, but a.
Pretty much, like yeah. a cover. Of
cover,
sorts.
I guess, yeah.
A rearrangement.
There's so many songs like that from, you know, growing up only listening to hip-hop, thinking this is all, even though the whole point of hip-hop is, you know, over different people's beats. But
sample.
You grow up and you're like, oh, that's that song. It's like growing up and seeing the thing that The Simpsons was referencing.
Yeah, or like realizing that Santa's not real.
Yeah, but growing up on Simpsons and rap songs.
What about a rapping Santa?
All these samples.
Rapping presents.
You didn't know were samples. And rapping Santas, I suppose.
Rapping presents.
Yeah.
That's where it came from.
Tyler Perry should make a rapping Santa movie.
He should. What else happened in 1995 from a film perspective?
A few movies came out. We talked about it last week, but since no one listened, I might recap some of them.
Little Monsters?
Little Monsters came out. No, it didn't.
Sudden Death.
Sudden Death came out.
All the way down in 147.
And you may have guessed from one of the songs there, Batman Forever also came out.
Ah. Kiss from a Rose, Seal.
You know what movie came in at number seven that year? Seven.
Oh, yeah. I know what you're saying. It's so marketing.
Yeah. Interestingly, also coming out this year was Billy Madison. But Billy Madison came in at number 75. Beating it by 13 was a little movie called Tommy Boy. Tommy Tommy Boy came out in March of 1995, budgeted $20 million, a gross of $32.7 million. I believe it only got released at cinemas in the US, hence the lower number. I think a movie like this, you know, a lot of it's coming off the equity of a TV star.
Oh, yeah.
That wasn't necessarily a TV star in other markets like Australia.
Mm-hmm. Correct.
In terms of Rotten Tomatoes scores, critics score of 42%, which is identical to Billy Madison. Audience score of 90%.
Really?
Which is higher than Billy Madison. This might be the highest gap we've had.
The king of the Delta.
Yeah. Yeah, this is a real Delta Goodrum, this one.
Mm.
Now, driving, really bringing down that 42% was the Roger Eberts of the world.
Uh-huh.
Gave it one star.
Yeah.
It made his most hated list.
Yeah.
He said, Tommy Boy is one of those movies that plays like an explosion down at the screenplay factory. You can almost picture a bewildered office boy, his face smudged with snot, wandering through the ruins and rescuing pages at random. Too bad they didn't mail them to the insurance company instead of filming them.
Oh, Roger.
Roger.
I hope he's up there having a whiskey sour with Farley right now.
He probably is.
I'd
like to think that too. So, you know, not a huge box office smash, not a critical roaring success either, but it would go on to be one of the top home video sellers for Paramount.
Mm, yeah.
Top 10, in fact.
Of
their ever year? Of their home video selling DVDs and shit, VHS DVDs.
Do you get that?
This Paramount is, they're no slouch. This is Indiana Jones, this is The Godfather. These are big movies.
Coming to America.
Amongst which is Tommy Boy. That's of significance.
Why did I say Coming to America with a South African accent?
I don't know.
We'll never know.
I don't know. But was this a big one for you, Greg?
No.
Yeah. Eventually?
No.
Really interesting. I was quite, I mean, I alluded to it before, but we didn't know who Chris Farley was then in Australia. There was no equity there.
He annoyed me.
Yeah,
I'll be honest.
Exactly.
I found him annoying.
I wrote that in my notes. I remember seeing this trailer and going, that looks fucking stupid.
And David Spade wasn't a big David Spade guy.
Man, and if you remember, which you probably don't because it was our second episode or something, with Billy Madison, talked about, I didn't really know who Adam Sandler was until The Wedding Singer. So basically we didn't have SNL in Australia until late 90s when we got pay TV and stuff.
Mm.
And some people had gotten onto his albums and things.
Yeah,
and
he was kind of underground.
Yeah, yeah. In Australia, it was quite underground. You were ahead of me, I think, when we talked about that.
Yeah.
And so movies like Billy Madison, I only discovered years later. This was similar, but probably even later. So if I only found Sandler in 98 or whatever Wedding Singer was, there's no way I knew Farley earlier than that. This movie was 95. I'm pretty sure I remember seeing this trailer and just being like, what the fuck's that? That's dumb.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it wasn't until I realize now, it's actually connecting a few dots for me, that era of actually getting pay TV in your house was quite game changing from a comedy point of view specifically. Because all these new ingredients, all these new influences coming straight into your household that I'd heard of Saturday Night Live, didn't totally understand what it was until then.
Just knew it was seemed to be where a bunch of legends hung out.
But I was like, oh, was it like, hey, it's Saturday? I don't know. Is it their version of that show?
Still don't.
Conan O'Brien was a big one because the Comedy Channel on Foxtel was like, had all this shit.
Yeah.
And they would show old SNL too. So I think eventually I got to know this Chris Farley guy and was like, oh, okay, he's something. But still, I never went out of my way to watch this movie.
Mm.
I think it was on TV a lot, or at least, on Foxtel a lot. And so I just caught it here and there, but I never was like, oh, Tommy Boy tonight.
Mm.
It never quite got to Billy Madison status in those days of like, movie night, let's watch that. But it was around. And I liked it, but it wasn't so much in the firm rotation.
Yeah.
Yeah, so much.
Yeah. His energy made me nervous. I found him anxious. He made me anxious.
Yeah, and I think also around this point, by the time I'm conscious of – well, just more generally conscious as a human, because in 1995 I was 11. It's Beverly Hills Ninjas coming out and that looks stupid too. So I'm just like, I'm not interested in this guy at any point.
I didn't get his genius.
I didn't get it. I didn't get it at all. And then, yeah, as the years went on, the YouTubes and such and seeing all the clips, the Matt Foley character, the motivational speaker, down by the river.
Fucking
good, man.
Yeah.
And that was like a sketch he used to do at Second City in Chicago with Bob Odenkirk, who was also a writer on Conan but missed the show and his Better Call Saul.
Of course.
Yeah.
Is he in the new movie?
Yeah, he's in that new movie where he's like his John Wick basically.
Nobody.
Yeah, that looks cool.
The Val Morgan people were drumming it up to me.
So, oh, really?
Yeah,
Chris, yeah, it looks cool.
Chris said it's awesome.
But he wrote that sketch in the Second City days.
With Bob.
And Bob wrote it.
Bob wrote it.
Based on he'd seen Farley do a similar kind of character and he wrote a sketch based on that character, gave him the backstory and all that stuff, the Down by the River shit. And that was one of those sketches that started pre-SNL but then went on SNL and yada, yada, yada. But I'm not going to try to explain why he's a genius, but it's fucking good stuff.
Yeah.
So anyway, I guess over the years and upon reflection of understanding that this guy's a genius and knowing that there's not much out there that you can have to experience this genius, this movie started to feel a little bit more special.
Yeah.
But I still hadn't watched it again for a long time.
Yep.
Yeah.
Rap Black Sheep.
I don't think I've
Tommy
seen
Boy
it.
Tommy Boy 2.
I don't think I've seen it because I watched the trailer for it today thinking like, oh, I can't remember what happened in that one. I watched it, I'm like, I've not seen that movie. Isn't that funny? It's like it doesn't really exist. This one's so prominent and that one just kind of is now, there.
Would you say it's the black sheep of the two?
Yeah. It certainly is.
Dark horse.
Black certainly sheep. Is. Well, how about I get into the origin story of this picture?
Origin story.
So this movie, it comes in the earlier days of these these comedy movies, these comedy pictures.
Yeah, yeah.
Plucked from the world of SNL.
Yeah, under the watchful eye of a Lorne Michaels.
Lorne Michaels. And thrown on the big screen. Plucked from the small screen.
Let's take that 2 minutes and turn it into 122 minutes.
Yeah. The first being Blues Brothers in 1980.
Oh, yeah.
Wayne's World, 1992. Mm. Coneheads, 1993. Wayne's World 2, 1993. And actually all of those, as I said, Blues Brothers had Chris Farley in it.
Oh.
Yeah, which is interesting in and of itself. Now, this one is and isn't an SNL movie. It's not based on a sketch.
There's a bit of material in here.
It's just based on these two guys.
Mm.
They're real life banter. So they shared an office at SNL. Chris Farley and David Spade joined SNL both in 1990. Farley is one of these rare cases where he didn't even audition. He was picked off the stage at Second City Chicago by Lorne Michaels himself.
That's pretty cool.
I assume doing Down by the River.
Something.
And David Spade joined initially as a writer, but eventually moving up to becoming a cast member on screen, et cetera, et cetera. Now, interestingly, yeah, these two guys shared an office. They became best buddies. In the next office is Chris Rock and Adam Sandler. What a strange life, isn't it? And there's all these wacky stories of them behind the scenes, yada, yada, yada. But interestingly, David Spade was not having a great time. He nearly quit, I think, because he started as writer but then did become a cast member. But often someone like a Dana Carvey would – David Spade would write a sketch and Dana Carvey would do it.
Yeah.
Would go to Dana Carvey.
They feel a little interchangeable.
They're the same type. This is the issue.
And mousy, so, mousy.
Yeah, and Dana Carvey's so fucking good that it's like, well, yeah, give it to him. And I was watching the interview today and there was – something with two politicians that were both a Dana Carvey type and Spade's like, okay, well, I'll do one, he'll do the other. And they're like, well, or Dana Carvey could do both. So he's not having a good time, but he's having a great time with Farley and they pay each other out all the time and like pretty much this movie, that same dynamic. And Lorne Michaels observes this and says, hey, it should be a movie.
Mm.
What about a movie? So this is kind of a big – Farley's already breaking out. But for Spade, this is a significant deal because he hadn't been getting his screen time and now suddenly he's going to be in the movies.
And wasn't, not to jump to precasties, but wasn't Rob Lowe originally sort of more of the...
Yeah, well, this is the part that I get confused by because the story goes that from there, Lon Michaels says, all right, well, that should be a movie. Let's get two of our writers on the case. And those two writers were Bonnie and Terry Turner.
Yes.
A writing couple, married.
Mm. Bonnie and Tez.
Kind of legends. So they were on SNL from 86 to 92, but were also the screenwriters of Coneheads, Wayne's World 1 and 2.
Oh, yeah.
And the Brady Bunch movie, which I feel like doesn't get the respect it deserves. It's pretty good.
What about a Very Brady sequel?
I don't know if they did that.
They moved
one.
On.
They moved on.
Yeah.
And they created Third Rock from the Sun and that 70s show. Ahead. Well, no, they went on to television.
Oh, sorry. Quit the Brady series.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Yeah, while they're ahead.
While they're ahead.
That movie is good though.
Sequel or the first one?
I haven't seen the sequel, I don't think. The first one, it's fucking weird.
Yeah, because it's they're set. They're not. They're in.
There's no reason for them to be like.
They're in modern times.
They're in modern times, but there's no time travel or anything. They're just a weird family, and everyone's just
it's
like.
It's a great concept.
What the fuck's up with that family? Yeah.
It's
it's so good.
It's a good idea. Let's not explain it.
It came out the same year as this movie too.
We should do it.
Yeah, well, it was one of the early movies when we were talking about doing this podcast that I was like, let's do the podcast.
Hey, this is our show.
Yeah.
We can do it.
We can do it. But yeah, they also made Third Rock from the Sun and the 70s show. So they're kind of a big deal. But this is the narrative, I suppose, from one point of view, the genius of Lorne Michaels seeing this and going, yeah, make that movie. But then the flip side is you hear from the director.
James Cameron.
Peter Siegel.
Peter Siegel.
who said initially the script was a bit different. It was called Billy the Third, a Midwestern. Mm. But knowing that Billy Madison was already in production, they
had
didn't
to drop
have,
Billy.
Yeah, they're like, well, they're not going to call it Billy.
These Billies everywhere.
Yeah, all these SNL Billies out there.
Nah.
It's not going to happen. And he says that the original script had it more as Farley and Rob Lowe as brothers and that being sort of the centered duo.
A bit of a Arnie and DeVito.
I suppose, yeah. And probably also just thinking big screen.
Rob Lowe.
Yeah, it's like Rob Lowe or David Spade.
Mm. I'll take Rob Lowe.
He hadn't grown his goatee yet, you know.
You didn't have his NFL sports hat on. Sports. You seen that?
No.
His memes, his photos of him, he's at an NFL game and he doesn't have a Broncos or a Raiders hat.
Oh, it just says
on.
Sports.
It's an NFL hat. Like it's got the NFL logo on it. He's like,
is
Rob
this
Lowe.
Rob Lowe, or
Rob Lowe really gets excited for sports or something. I can't remember. It's worded better than that.
That's definitely something I would do.
Go team.
How about that local sports team?
Continue, sorry.
There's some incongruity there.
Mm, yeah.
But I could also imagine that Lorne Michaels may say, let's make that movie, but then once it goes through the system, they're like, yeah, but one of them's got to be good looking, right? Mm. And Rob Lowe, I suppose.
Mm.
But anyway, director comes in. Peter Siegel and says, no, we got to strip this back to that duo. That's the magic. Let's make that happen. And so he brings in another writer, Fred Wolf, and they, another SNL writer, I think, and they rewrite this thing, refocused around those two, but they run out of time. So they literally ran out of time. They got 2/3 through the script and it was time to make the movie. And he's like, nah, we haven't cracked it. He tried to leave, but he was legally obligated to stay.
That sounds stressful.
It was fucking stressful. He'd just come off doing Naked Gun 33 and a third with the Zucker Brothers, a career high at this point for him.
Yeah,
and he's like,
course.
I'm going to throw it all out for this fucking thing. I've just done something awesome and now I'm committed to this piece of shit. This is a train wreck. Mm. The whole schedule was fucked because usually these – SNL movies, they shoot in the off season. So while SNL's off air, they shoot these things in the summer, but they'd missed that window already. So they had to shoot it while they were making SNL. And that SNL schedule is hardcore. Like from like you're pitching on a Monday, writing all that kind of shit.
It's high stakes.
It's high stakes, man. High pressure, a lot of drugs. Mm. And so they're flying between New York and Toronto multiple times during the week. Go do a yes and no rehearsal, come back, do this, yada, 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 without a finished script.
You know who else could have done that?
Who?
Michael J. Fox.
He could have done that. It's very Back to the Future. You know who does a great impression of Michael J. Fox?
Chris Farley.
David Spade.
David Spade.
Should I play it? It's pretty good.
Oh, actually?
Yeah, he actually does a good one.
Just like to say that the show I work on is going up against Spin City this year, which makes for a fun rivalry. I saw Michael J. Fox before the show, and he said, Spade, we're going to stomp your ass, all right? We're going to knock you back to a mid-season replacement. Don't look directly at me. Avert your eyes. You're only 5'6". You'll never make it on your show.
It's great.
He's also doing funny things with his arms, I think, before we knew what
that meant.
Michael was dealing with.
But no, but Michael J. Fox always did that.
Yeah, but it wasn't that a coping, like a way to not have to keep his arms still?
Even when he was like 20?
Oh, no, on Spin City. He was talking about Spin City.
Oh, yeah, maybe.
Yeah, I think it was at that point.
Oh, yeah.
He wasn't
I feel
to
like
know.
He did that.
Maybe, but Spin City was definitely like the hands in the pockets days.
Yeah,
and
yeah,
then the
big time.
Yeah.
We digress occasionally.
But a good digression because I watched that clip earlier today and I was like, I have no reason to put that in.
You're welcome.
Until now.
Wow, that's pretty well.
That is pretty well.
Wow.
So anyway, they're making this thing. They don't have a finished script. So Siegel and Wolf
keep going.
Decided to like do this brainstorm where they write down a bunch of personal anecdotes.
Sounds like a furniture store.
It does. Siegel and Wolf.
Yeah.
They've got a great sectional.
Oh, absolutely.
So they write down these personal anecdotes or things they've seen on these cards, throw them on the floor and try to string together the rest of the story based on these things. So, for example, Siegel had recently gone to the petrol station or the gas station.
Yes, and
parked a little too far away from the thing, from the pump,
and then
smashed the door.
Oh.
Yeah. They'd also read an article about a deer smashing a car, you know, that kind of shit.
Okay.
Now, the funny thing about they took all these disparate things and stitched them together. The funny thing is that's exactly what Roger Ebert said this movie is like. Yeah. A bunch of disparate pages. Shit.
Little did he know that that would
that was exactly
penetrate
what happened.
Cinema for the next two decades at least.
Yeah, that's basically also Family Guy. But yeah, all this stuff was very, very real time. So this shit was so hectic that Siegel would call the producer at 2 a.m. and be like, hey, we have a new character to cast and his first line shoots tomorrow. You've got to wake up the casting director because that's all just happening as they go.
Mm.
Now, in addition to all of this, you got Farley and Spade basically trying to make each scene funnier as they go as well. Mm. Like, of course, yeah, there's the old, oh, and they, you know, that was improvised. Yes, there was improvisation, but also I think day to day they actually sat down and were like, how can we make this scene funnier? How can we make this scene funnier? So that's where they brought in more and more of their personal shit, like fat guy in a little coat. All that stuff was just their office banter. They're like, I don't know if anyone else is going to find this funny, but we find it funny, so let's just fucking do it.
That's what we're here for.
That's what we're here for, man. Now, we've mentioned quite a bit of the cast, but just to round it out, Rob Lowe is obviously in this. He's actually uncredited.
I read that today.
It's interesting because when you Google the movie, shows the cast, he's not in it. And I was like, what? Apparently he had some contractual obligation with
The Stand?
The Stephen King thing, yeah.
I loved that when I was a kid.
I never saw it. I was too
obsessed
scared.
With it. Yeah, I thought it had Gary Sinise.
They were big TV events, weren't they?
Was Gary Sinise in it?
Probably. Was she thinking of Forrest Gump?
Oh, maybe.
Or Apollo 13.
Mm. Or Ransom.
Ransom, is he in that?
Yeah.
Or one of those crime shows.
CSI.
Yeah.
City of the Crime.
CSI Sinise. Hey, this film also has Brian Dennehy.
Yay.
And Bo Derek.
Yeah.
Bish Bash Bosh, he goes over movie.
I love Brian Dennehy.
Actually, side note. Yeah, he is good, isn't he?
It's amazing.
But side note, apparently this movie is also a retelling of Hamlet. I'm not sure if this is official, but apparently...
Oh, is that how they got Big Dennehy involved?
Maybe. Yeah, we're doing an adaptation of Hamlet. Are you in?
Yeah.
But basically, I don't know my Hamlet very well. I don't know if you do, but...
About a little itty-bitty pig. That's a quote.
From?
Not Criminal Minds. What's the show that Gangster's Paradise is from?
Oh, Dangerous Minds.
Dangerous Minds.
Well, apparently Tommy is the prince.
Oh.
Whose father dies.
Mm-hmm.
Mother, Bo Derek, is Gertrude.
Oh,
in reality, he's married to his stepbrother.
Such a Gertrude.
So Rob Lowe is Claudius. David Spade's character is Horatio. There you go. So I don't know enough to dig into that any further, but apparently it's a thing.
Yeah, I haven't read Hamlet.
Me neither. Oh, actually, you know what? I think I saw Hamlet on Broadway.
Oh.
On Broadway with Jude Law.
Left a lasting impression.
Yeah, well, I didn't know what they were saying.
Hatheth the notheth. That's cultured.
Bish bash bosh, you got yourself a movie wrap party down at the old Viper Room.
Yeah.
Probably would have been.
Sponsored by Callaghan Auto Parts.
Yeah. Let's play the trailer. Yeah!
You know, a lot of people go to college for 7 years.
I know. They're called doctors.
This always has been, always will be, a family firm. Oh, son of a... Someday my son will run it.
Luke. Luke. I am your father. Lalo.
Aw, I've interrupted happy time.
That's my name.
Yeah, that's your new office now.
Whoa.
Do we really want to put the future of the company in Tommy's hands?
Promise me you'll look after Tommy boy here till he gets his feet wet.
Sure, and thanks for choosing me. Hey, Tommy, this is not a vacation for me. I'm out here against my will, so the least you can do is pretend to work. Ugh, I can actually hear you getting fatter. All right, it's sale time, so remember, we don't take...
No for an answer.
No.
Okie dokie.
I'm gonna pass.
Gotcha, thanks. Oh, son of a... That's gonna leave a mark.
Okay, let's check you out. All right.
It's a clip, huh?
Are you sure? He's a big dumb animal, isn't he, folks?
No, son of a... What'd you do?
Good trailer.
Oh, that was brilliant.
Greg went and peed, so he's lying through his teeth.
Oh, mate, I was talking about my wee.
Oh, yeah. It's a good one?
Yeah.
Did Don LaFontaine narrate it?
In a bowl.
One man, too much beer.
One stream.
Ah, Greg, what the hell happened in this movie?
Oh, yeah, yeah, I'll help you out with the synopsis, dear. So, look, on the surface, this is a classic sales road trip film.
Classic.
Two opposites. I'm about to find out they're really not that different after all.
Oh, nice.
But scratch the surface a little bit, Tristan.
Mm.
And you'll also find a tale of... late bloomation, achieving one's potential.
Yes, yes, yes.
Rising to the challenge.
Yes.
Etc.
I like that take because I've got more on that later.
Excellent.
Continue.
Tommy Callahan finishing uni after a respectable 7-year stint when he returns home to the family business. He's a little rough around the edges. Still, he seems to have a heart of gold. And let me tell you, he has empathy and EQ. And we both know that in the modern business setting...
most important things.
Oh, the rest you can teach.
Yeah.
Unfortunately for Tommy, he's a little polarizing on the floor and certainly in the boardroom.
Yep.
But fortunately, he's got his dad, Tommy Sr., the founder of Callahan Auto, to teach him, you know, the ropes, some of the cool catchphrases about T-bones and horses' ass... cow's asses.
Yeah, the butcher's ass.
Butcher's ass. It's enjoyable.
Yeah.
Unfortunately for Tommy, his dad dies whilst dancing on his wedding day to an aging mega babe, Bo Derek.
Yeah.
So that happened. So basically Tommy's got one crack at saving the company. He's got to go on a hell of a sales road trip.
He sure does.
He's got to get the numbers on. So he does what he thinks he should and gets the guy who knows the business. Guess who that is? Spade.
Yeah.
And they get in Spade's car there. It's like a Mustang or something.
I don't know.
And they go on a road trip and try to sell some auto parts.
Yeah, nice.
Whilst his new stepbrother and mum are trying to sell the company to Dan Aykroyd. It's also a love story between stepmum and stepbrother.
Oh, I thought you were going to say between the Spade and Farley. Because I was just thinking as you were saying
it's actually a love triangle, but I'll talk about that in a little bit.
Ooh la la. I was just thinking it's actually I didn't think about this before, but as far as bromances go, this is an early one, isn't it? It's kind of a bromance.
It's definitely a bromance.
Yeah. There weren't a lot of bromance movies. I mean, I guess there were.
Sure there was.
I guess the modern comedy bromance though.
Mm.
I know there's like the cops being paired together type of movies and they eventually learn to work together and whatnot. But this is
Tango and Cash.
Yeah, but this is kind of, this is quite a, it's a bit more romantic, I think, this one. Because at the end it's like, hey, and you got a friend out of this.
Oh.
I know you got plenty of friends, but I don't. That was a nice moment.
Yeah, Spade was understated.
He delivered.
In?
Spades.
Oh, yeah, because of his name and whatnot.
Yeah. Nice. There you go.
Should do a pod.
We should. Look at that yes ending nonsense. Oh. How did you find the rewatch?
It was quite pleasant.
Yeah.
I was going into this knowing that I didn't really used to like this, and I've obviously have a newfound respect for Chris Farley.
Yeah.
So I sat down to watch it with Carol, and in the opening sequence she was like, oh, this is a stupid movie, isn't it? She doesn't like stupid movies.
Yeah, right.
I said, yes it is. But I don't want any shit canning of Mr. Farley while we watch it, please. I don't want you to tear this one up. The late, great man. Yeah, let him rest in peace and let us view in peace.
Yeah.
And like she was into it actually, I think.
Yeah, I mean it is a stupid movie.
What? Yeah.
Yeah. But it, like especially after doing that research to get to the origin story, it does make you think about what's good about this movie, and I guess it's not really the script. Like it's kind of dumb.
Mm.
But the performances really make it something. Like this guy, the script could be the fucking dictionary and I'd watch it.
There might not have been a script.
Yeah, like.
For all we know.
He is just a piece of work. He's a wild man. He's the size. But the agility with which he's able to move is something.
Yeah.
He does those cartwheels where he almost stays in the same place.
Yeah, like a proper cartwheel.
Yeah, like a real one. Like a – he does them a lot though. On the promo tour, he was on Letterman and he did cartwheels on the way in. He just gets so sweaty.
Oh, bless.
Oh, he's great. But, yeah, the way he moves it is just – his face, everything is just amazing.
Apparently he was necking about plus 20 cups of coffee a day.
Fuck.
On set. Like over 20.
Is coffee a code word for something? Because fuck, yeah. And he, force of nature. That's what I wrote down. He's just fuck. And David Spade's good too. This is interesting because I think, you know, once you get to the Joe Dirts and that shit, I'm like, okay, David Spade, I'm not a fan kind of thing.
You didn't like Joe Dirt?
No, never into it.
What about Brandy?
What's that?
It's the girl in it. She's from Sweet Valley High.
Fuck, maybe I haven't even seen it. Oh, I know her though, yeah. Well, this is what I think is interesting because you see these two working together and you're like, there is chemistry. These guys are great. And I like that David Spade's thing is, yes, he's the nerdier one, but he's not a loser. Like he's witty and he's not sort of in a position of – they're equals in a way.
Mm.
He's got his own kind of charisma going on in a more understated kind of way. And I like that persona he has in this movie, which is similar to what he had in the sitcom, what was it called? That magazine.
Just Shoot Me,
which I still liked him in that. And so it is one of those ones where you wonder if Chris Farley was still alive and he's the straight man basically.
Mm.
But then he goes and does a Joe Dirt, which to me just doesn't feel like, I don't know, never appealed to me. I feel like he's better as a straight man.
Mm.
Yeah. But anyway, I digress. But actually on that, also in Roger Ebert's review, he says something about this which I disagree with entirely. Says, this movie is an assembly of cliches and obligatory scenes from dozens of other movies, all are better. It has only one original idea and that's a bad one. The inspiration to making the hero's sidekick into simultaneously his buddy, his critic, and his rival. But that's, like I was just saying, that's what I actually liked about it. I liked that Spade was sort of semi-antagonist a little bit at certain points, but then there was this underlying love there too. I don't know. Maybe it's hard to disconnect knowing that they were best mates and that Farley's dead. And it's hard to remove that from your brain when you're watching this thing, so there's – maybe you project more onto it than what's there. But I enjoyed it. I like the dynamic.
It was economical.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah, exactly. I liked that.
You got two characters on a road trip, Roger.
Yeah.
What do you want?
Exactly. I liked it. So you're wrong, Rog. Sorry, Rog. Got to disagree with you on this one. Respectfully disagree. Now, I did also think it's important, what's not important, but unavoidable perhaps to compare this to Billy Madison. Same year, similar origin story, shooting at the same time.
Yeah.
I guess the nuance is that Sandler was no longer a cast member. He had been fired. So it's not an SNL movie, but it did launch the Happy Madison empire.
Mm-hmm.
But we didn't, our rewatch of that one, both of us were a bit like, eh. And it's, I think,
a bit cringe.
I think part of, yeah, I think part of what I liked about this more was that the character of Tommy himself was just a better dude.
Yeah. Like, he's Billy a great
Madison,
guy.
Yeah. Billy Madison is, he's kind of just a privileged, spoiled kid.
Yeah.
Whereas at first it feels like Tommy's going to be that guy, but
he's not.
He wants to help everyone. He puts his, all his inheritance on the line to save everyone else's jobs.
Yeah.
He didn't have to do that. He could have just bailed and been rich or whatever, which is probably what Billy Madison would have been happy with.
Mm.
But, yeah, he
– he wasn't working down the plant.
Yeah.
He didn't go to uni for 7 years. He still passed uni. I know a lot of people are very hard, smart working – smart work. I know plenty of people that haven't finished uni.
Yeah. Exactly. So he's a lot more – I can get on board with this character more, whereas I think when we both – we watch Billy Madison more, like, he's kind of a dickhead a little bit.
He was a massive dickhead.
He still has that, like, oh, but he's got a good heart kind of thing. But it was still pretty self-centered.
Yeah. He just wanted to bang Veronica Vaughn.
Exactly. So like, I think
– one piece of ace.
This one does come out ahead for me.
Which, if you'd asked me at the time,
Yeah, I wouldn't have thought so. I mean, I definitely wouldn't put it as high as a Wayne's World, for instance.
Nope.
Definitely not.
Definitely not.
No, nowhere near that. But I think we kind of alluded to before, I think the fact that there isn't a lot of Farley product out there, it does make this a rarer little artifact, doesn't it?
It's quite a, it's got plenty of shortcomings, but it's quite a sentimental film.
Yeah.
Wrapped up in the fact that Farley's, you know, deceased.
Yeah. Oh, and one unexpected thing, I think, as a lover of music, is I like the music in this. And the wedding songs and shit and the performance.
Good wedding.
It gives me the sense that Farley is a guy that likes good music. I feel like these are personal touches perhaps. I could be completely wrong. But the fact that he's sung the Ray Charles one.
They're into it.
And they were so into it. And it was pretty good. I feel like he'd be a good addition to our karaoke circle, but unfortunately, he's not available anymore.
He really would have brought an energy that we haven't yet seen.
Yeah, yeah. It would have been something.
Yeah, people would have live streamed it.
Yeah, exactly. We would have had more than five people watching at once.
That, which is a problem.
True.
I did enjoy the father-son. Carol's like, oh, the dad's not going to live around for very long. This is too nice a bond.
Yeah.
There's no tension here.
Man. Well, yeah.
But it was nice while we had it. I always knew Brian Denny, he would be a great dad.
It's good casting, isn't it? Because they seem like, you could imagine that.
Yeah.
And I do like the love there. I don't know what happened to the mother. But actually, this is not a bad segue because I recently watched Raya and the Last Dragon. No, Raya and the Last Dragon. Raya and the Last Dragon, which is
not free until June.
Yeah. But I saw it at the cinema.
Yeah.
So if you're able to, go to the cinema.
Oh, yes. Always go to the cinema.
But it kind of reacquainted me with sort of the classic fairy tale Disney tropes and whatnot. Yeah. And one that I hadn't considered, I was actually listening to a podcast about it, Black Men Can't Jump in Hollywood.
Mm-hmm.
Great podcast. They were talking about Raya and the Last Dragon. And they pointed out that in all these Disney movies, all these fairy tales, there's no mother. They only have a dad. And then often the dad dies, like in this. And that was kind of just a random segue that made me realize, well, actually,
this is a Disney fairy tale.
This movie is almost a fairy tale. And actually, if you think about this movie and Billy Madison, it's like frat boy fairy tales.
Mm.
So if you go old school with these fairy tales, I know these are outdated tropes, but just bear with me. If you go to old school fairy tales and they're targeted at young girls and what is the dream of a young girl to marry a prince, yada, yada, yada. That's how you get your traditional fairy tales, let's say. Well, the ones that have been popularized in Disney films and such, Disney princesses and that kind of thing. If you think about your typical frat boy, what are the tensions, the underlying tensions there? You're kind of at a crossroads, not a boy, not you're not yet a man, to appropriate some Britney Spears lyrics.
Not a girl.
But you, there's this thing of like, you know, I want to live up to my dad's image. I want to show the world that I'm
take
worthy.
Over the fund.
Yeah, I'm worthy. Take me seriously, world. A lot of these movies kind of bring that dream to life. Billy Madison, Treated Like a Joke. You know, we're all kind of, especially Aussies, this larrikin persona at uni. You're having a good time, yada, yada, yada.
Larrikinism.
But you got your Billy Madisons. You got your Van Wilders. You got all these sort of man-child type characters, but at a very specific life stage of this, you are a man-child because you kind of were a child a year ago and now you're trying to prove that you're a worthy adult and you can succeed in the world. A lot of these movies, like Billy Madison, like Tommy Boy, like Happy Gilmore a little bit, I feel like there's a few of them, all in this very specific era too,
mm-hmm.
that are kind of, what's the word, satisfying that urge, I suppose, for the frat boys of the world, for the college age, college graduate age young male.
Oh, yeah.
And in some ways, quite literally, you know, this movie has a evil stepmother, for instance.
Yes, yeah. Oh, good, good.
Dead father, no mother. This slightly heightened reality, you know, it's a bit over the top, bit slapstick.
Not a cartoon.
Not a cartoon, but kinda. There is this underlying sweetness to it. Same with Billy Madison.
Yes.
Almost like a bit too cheesy at points, but then you're kind of okay with it because it just kind of fits the template a little bit. The differences, I suppose, is often in the Disney versions you have the wacky talking animal, but in these movies they're the main character.
Yeah.
The Farrelly Brothers movies kind of take this to the extreme. Like Something About Mary is almost treated like a fairy tale. They have this over-the-top, almost musical nature to them. But then they also have their own kind of tropes. If you think about Billy Madison and almost every Adam Sandler movie, in this movie there's the girl, the role of the love interest is almost the same in every movie.
Support.
The daddy issues thing, the business, all that kind of stuff is pretty consistent. Now again, in Roger Ebert's review, he calls this out as a fault. He doesn't say the word fairy tale, but he says, they begin ticking off all these story cliches. The dumb son returns to family business, unexpected stepmother, company gets in trouble or workers lose their jobs. It's up to the kids to save the day. Evil stepmother, road movie, buddy picture. But again, these are, I kind of liked that.
Mm.
I feel like there's this very specific subgenre in the mid-90s of frat boy fairy tales.
Mm.
Which I don't mind.
I like it. Very, it was a very astute.
Yes, I was waiting for an astute.
It was, you earned it. I don't hand out astutes willy
nilly.
You're
no Dukes.
This is no Siri Bob.
Yeah.
But I give you an astute.
Let the record show that Greg called Seymour astute earlier today.
Well, that was also warranted.
Yeah. He can high five now.
Yeah. Fat Boy Fairy Tales. I like it.
Yeah. I think what made that work for me is the movies are kind of, there's got lame elements in these movies. They're a bit cheesy, but I don't mind for some reason. And I think it's a bit like a fairy tale. They have these tropes that you don't mind because it's just part of the package.
There's something comforting about it. There's an embedded nostalgia that you could just.
I think so.
Watch this comfortably.
Yeah. But it does make you think. Do you watch a movie like this and think, and we know Chris Farley's dead. He made like two more movies after this.
Mm-hmm.
Do you find yourself going, fuck, I wonder what he would have done?
Of course. I like to think he might have done a serious movie at some point.
That's exactly what I was thinking. Because you think of, I mean, even Adam Sandler's done that. So part of me is like, would he have just fallen into the Happy Madison crew like a David Spade? Like a Rob Schneider, hopefully not. Yeah, I think he would have had his own little, carved out his own little thing, potentially taken Spade with him, but then probably taken that arc that Hollywood loves of taking the funny guy.
And playing Meatloaf in a biopic.
Yeah, fuck, he could. He could. That could be his Uncut Gems kind of thing.
Mm.
Yeah.
The dark years.
Yeah.
And it would be called For Love, brackets, anything.
but not that. Next brackets.
Brackets. Sub brackets.
The other brackets, yeah. It's a good movie.
It's a good song.
Writes itself. I was listening to Meatloaf in the gym the other day. I was trying to find new gym music. Dun, dun,
dun. Oh, I want to hit that on karaoke next week.
Yeah, yeah. Do the full 12-minute version. Oh, I like how you're assuming we're doing karaoke next week.
Are we not?
Oh, fuck yeah, we should.
Fuck, I think we are.
But in other crowds, it's one of those things you have to pretend.
So, karaoke?
It might accidentally happen on the night, but right. Obviously we're not planning.
Carol's already said it.
We're talking about we've got our annual, what is it?
Double date.
Double date next week. Oh, which also means that Wives of the Show will be on the podcast with us next week.
Yeah.
I sound like I'm wrapping up the show, but this is more of a sneak peek. Next week, Wives of the Show will be on the pod with us. We're doing Romeo plus Juliet.
Plus Quindin Tava.
Plus Quindin Tava plus John Leguizamo.
In the Baz Luhrmann epic saga.
All are punished.
Hath of the, it's like Hamlet, but a different movie. Same author.
This one is a bit closer to the source material than Tommy Boy, but only just.
No, that's a good point. That's a good point.
Just.
It's more literal.
Well, I mean, obviously it took inspiration from Tommy Boy.
There's cars. Guy,
you know, oh, a modern interpretation of Shakespeare. Baz Luhrmann's ears perked up.
Hello.
Hey, but back on Farley, yeah, where would he be now?
We're at.
It is interesting to note that when he did pass away, he was already recording his role in Shrek. He was supposed to be Shrek.
Of course.
Which I do have a clip of. So this is...
Yeah, he'd done three quarters of it, hadn't he? Or even
yeah,
more.
Yeah. So I've got a clip of Chris Farley as Shrek here.
And a noble romantic mission to warm the cockles of your heart.
Yeah. I like my cockles room temperature, thank you very much.
Hey, if you're not doing this for cockle warming, why are you doing it?
Simple. Fartwad gets his princess, I get what I want.
Which is? Now come on, what do you want?
I don't have time to set it to music.
Oh, this is another one of those onion things.
No, this is one of those drop it and leave me alone things.
Well, why don't you want to talk about it?
Why do you want to talk about it?
Why are you answering the question with a question?
Why are you asking questions I don't want to answer?
Why are you blocking?
I'm not blocking.
Then why do you have problems expressing your wants?
I don't. I want you to shut up. See? No problem.
You're just displacing your anger.
Believe me, it's properly placed.
You're really mad at whoever did this to you.
No one did anything to me.
Yes, yes, yes. Someone hurt you so bad. Someone hurt you many years ago.
Leave my parents out of this.
Breakthrough.
Etc.
Aww.
It's nice, isn't it?
Yeah.
Aww. He was also meant to be the cable guy.
Yeah.
In The Cable Guy.
But he asked for that Van Damme money.
Yeah. He was... This was not because he passed away, but he was supposed to be Ishmael in Kingpin, but he had to turn it down.
Because of this.
Was it because of this?
Yeah.
Ah. And a potential
third
ghost.
He would have been good in that.
He would have been pretty good. He would have had to be a bit subdued though, which I don't know. But it would have been a different movie. He would have done cartwheels somewhere.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah.
A potential third Ghostbusters movie was going to be his thing too. I think, I mean, it could have gone anyway really, couldn't it?
The it's only way was up.
I kept imagining, because I have that sketch with him and Patrick Swayze auditioning for the Chippendales is always in my head. It was the first thing I think of when I think of him.
Yeah.
And then I just started thinking of him in all the different Patrick Swayze roles. Like imagine him in Roadhouse but playing it straight. Just a shot-for-shot remake of Roadhouse.
Nice.
any Patrick Swayze movie, it works. As Bodhi. In Point Break. It works, man. At the very least, we could have had that.
This is genius.
We could have had that. Oh. Now, you know what's also freaky about this movie is obviously we've got Dan Aykroyd in there. Yeah, Ghost. And then Whoopi Goldberg would have to act like him too, so that would be great.
Oh, my Lord.
Yeah. Yeah.
What else? What other movies is Patrick Swayze?
Dirty Dancing, I guess.
Yeah, of course.
Yeah.
Oh. Genius.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, and yeah, so Dan Aykroyd is in this movie, which is kind of not sad, but just kind of weird because obviously he lost his on-screen duo partner, Belushi.
Oh, of course, yeah.
The same way at the same age.
Yeah.
They're both 33. Both
Speedball.
The cocaines and such. Yeah, yeah, cocaine and morphine.
It's called a Speedball?
Apparently.
Up and Downer.
Is that what that, yeah.
Yeah.
And fuck, it's fucking sad because he went back to host SNL in October of 1997.
Mm.
And a lot of the jokes in his opening monologue were about drugs and stuff. But like Chevy Chase came on and acted, pretended to be a sponsor. And like it was like a, you know, one of those type of jokes where it's not mean-spirited, but it was just like, you going to be all right for this? And they're like, yeah, I'm good now, whatever.
Mm.
And he died 2 months later. It's fucked. Yeah. It's fucked.
He didn't look very well, apparently.
Yeah. I didn't want to talk too much about his death either because it's like, let's celebrate the good times.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah. But it is kind of creepy that you got – it's almost – like basically what happened to Dan Aykroyd happened to David Spade because you do, you could also say all the same things. Like what would have happened – where would Belushi and Aykroyd be if he didn't pass away? Because he was supposed to be in Ghostbusters. They would have done other things together. Like you forget they were a duo. And then you think a lot of the Aykroyd stuff, he kind of tapered off, didn't he?
Well, he's made hundreds of millions of dollars.
In the vodka market.
Yeah, and he's got a close connection with creatures
the aliens.
With the aliens.
He saw them. He saw one of the aliens and one of them smiled at him. Menacing.
Yes.
I was thinking of Ralph Wiggum seeing babies.
Actually, the menacing one was a quote, wasn't his. He said someone else, he said they said
they were menacing.
Something, was it?
And Joe Rogan, for once, disagreed with his guest and said, really? Actually, speaking of Joe Rogan, so this is part of the –
he's got a podcast too. Should we plug it?
Well, I'm going to plug it because I got a clip. Because last time we talked about Rob Lowe was Wayne's World. Mm. We talked about how this stretch of his career was sort of the comeback after some dark times.
Yeah.
And the best – the darkest of the times was when he had a role in the opening for the Oscars – singing with Snow White, which I would love to play a clip of again here because it's quite spectacular. Yeah. It's quite spectacular.
Play that track.
Oh, Mr. Lowe, I'm such a fan.
Really? Well, I'm a big fan of yours, Snow, but you know, there's so much I'd like to know about you.
Used to work a lot for Walt Disney. Starring in cartoons every night and day.
Why did they make us
But
sound
you
like
said
that?
Goodbye to Grumpy and Sleepy. Left the dwarves behind, came to town to stay.
Lid lights keep on burning. Candles keep on turning. Ooh, rolling, rolling. Keep the cameras rolling. Rolling. Keep the cameras rolling. Keep the cameras rolling.
I was going to stop it sooner, but then I remember that last part. Keep the cameras. Oh, dear. Now, the reason I wanted to bring that up again is there's been an update. He's appeared on the Joe Rogan podcast in the last 12 months and talked about this very incident.
Oh, good.
It's pretty funny.
Did he say the aliens got him?
Yeah, one of them had a menacing look.
That was the year that Barry Levinson.
I could tell just from the first bar.
It was not good.
It was going to be bad. Yeah, when you're singing. Did you take singing lessons?
No.
Actually, found the whole thing.
What's that? You found the whole thing?
It's 11 minutes long.
No, it's 11 minutes of sheer terror.
That's on YouTube if you
want to
look at it.
Oh, okay. Of 11 minutes that ruined Hollywood producer Alan Carr's career forever. Hold on. I get it. Okay,
so I look out in the middle of the audience and I see Barry Levinson. So he's at this Oscars, he's about to win literally 11 Academy Awards. As an actor, there's no one you would want to impress more than Barry Levinson. It's the year of Rain Man. And I look out, Joe, in the middle of this, and I see his face. I'm not kidding. And he went like this. What the fuck?
You see him actually make those?
I see him mouth the words, what the fuck? And so... Talk about bombing. And I'm like, but you know, we have to have our actor's denial. Like, we can't get through a career without a healthy dose of denial. So I'm like, you know what? Fuck Barry Levinson. What does he know anyway? Fuck that guy. And I go backstage and it's in the green room and it's early in the show. And there's an older lady in the corner with like flaming red hair. And I'm kind of looking at her and she sees me and she goes, young man, I didn't know you were such a good singer. Come sit down. It was Lucille Ball.
Whoa.
And I went over and we sat down and she held my hand and we watched the Oscars together. And you know what? It made it all almost worthwhile.
All right. It's just so, oh man, I was looking for an excuse to put that clip back in there because it's been 100 episodes. You know, we like when our stars sing most of the time.
We do.
They like a Joe Pesci,
especially
for instance.
Especially at an event.
At an event, yeah, exactly.
Impromptu almost.
Yeah.
Well, not rehearsed.
It seems like it. Yeah.
Enough. If they rehearsed that enough, they wouldn't have done it.
Yeah.
Never said,
the whole thing
what?
Is bizarre. That was the Oscars, man.
Yeah,
and I will put it on Instagram because you can't see the visuals here.
What year was that? There was a recession or two.
89 or something.
Oh, and then, there you go.
Well, and then they didn't have the rights to use the likeness of Snow White. And so there was a big lawsuit with Disney the next day. And so the whole thing, it got more and more exposure, this terrible thing.
Imagine they had the internet back then.
Yeah. So poor Rob Lowe just wanted to bury this thing.
Rob Lowe's dodged a few bullets, kind of.
Well, yeah, he's had some dark times, man.
Given the video-centric nature of his mishaps.
Yeah.
He could have been worse.
We talked about this before. He did a movie a few years ago with Cameron Diaz and Jason Segel, Sex Tape, which I believe was an SEO hack to hide his sex tape.
Oh, nice.
So when people now search Rob Lowe sex tape, it comes up with the Cameron Diaz picture.
Genius.
Buried.
Take that.
Now he just needs to do a Snow White movie. You know who's a big fan of this movie?
Lorne Michaels
and Quentin Tarantino.
Yeah.
Said it's one of his favorite films of the 90s and he screened it as part of something he was doing of his favorite movies of the 90s and he owns it on 35mm film.
Oh, I tell you what I did hear.
Oh, yeah?
There's a bit of a love triangle on set.
Oh, yeah, okay.
So Spade and Farley were mates.
Oh.
They both enjoyed Rob Lowe's company.
Yeah.
Rob Lowe's apparently a pretty cool guy.
Yeah.
So they liked hanging out with him. So they'd hang out, the three of them would hang out quite a bit.
Yeah.
And then, well, depending on who tells the story, but there was one night that Farley might have been unwell, went retired early. This is Spade's recount.
Yeah.
And so Spade and Rob Lowe went out and painted the town white.
Yeah.
And the next day apparently Farley was super frosty. He was like, so how's Rob? It was just, and he like stood on his hand during filming.
Well, they,
and like heard it.
Apparently,
and
they fought all the time.
Yeah.
But I guess it was like a brotherly thing. But I was watching Adam Sandler was talking about it. It was him and Spade on Conan for some reason. And he was saying how he had to talk Farley out of punching David Spade once. He was so angry at him. It's like, don't punch him. It's lose lose. Because if you punch him and he gets knocked out or whatever, you're a jerk. If you punch him and then he beats you up,
you've lost the fight. You're a loser.
You're the biggest loser in the world.
Yeah.
And he's like, yeah, okay, you're right. Not don't hit him because he's your friend. There was all kinds of crazy stories, some that I don't even really want to say on here because it sounds pretty fucked up.
Yeah.
I'll tell you later.
Okay.
Should we get into the verdict?
Yeah.
I don't know what to say, really.
I don't remember asking you a goddamn thing.
I am the law.
I'd like an answer to the question, Judge.
I want to have them answered immediately.
You can't handle the truth.
What are you waiting for?
Say what again? I dare you.
Nothing further,
Your Honor.
And that's all I have to say about that.
Now this one, it's a funny one because, yes, I enjoyed the rewatch. I can't put it as high as something like a Wayne's World, but I definitely liked it more than a Billy Madison. And then it's undeniable the fact that, you know, this guy's only done a handful of movies, so it's a very special cultural artifact in many ways.
Uh-huh.
It's all we get, kinda. So objectively, I'd probably only give this 3 stars, but emotionally I want to give it like 4. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's definitely a rewatch.
Yeah.
For all the reasons we've kind of said at this point. For me, what about you, Greg?
Yeah, similar territory, Matt. Yeah. Similar territory. Yeah. It was, I mean, as I said, I didn't really enjoy this movie. When if I first watched it, I'm not 100% clear on that.
Yeah. It's one of those ones, yeah.
But I watched it and it seemed familiar. And I enjoyed it. It was like I had very low expectations.
Right, okay.
And Farley's I appreciate a lot more as I've got older.
Yeah.
And so I just enjoyed it. I'll give it a 3, but because it is like there's the scripts, you know,
yeah,
pretty light on. But I just enjoyed it. You know, I had a good time.
It's enjoyable. It's an enjoyable watch. Yeah.
And it was just like, man, that guy was a pretty nice guy. Yeah. I see why he was so popular.
Yeah. Yeah. They seem to have a pretty solid fucking crew, those guys.
Yeah. He's a sad story.
It is. Fucking sad. Man, I watched the Adam Sandler song again today.
Yeah, you did. I told Carol, if she teased him in the movie, that I was going to make her watch this Adam Sandler song.
Fuck. And at first I was okay, and then there's a part of the song that I forgot.
The dust came in.
I'd have a moment. Ara walks in at the wrong time, obviously. Just give me a moment.
Get out!
Get out! You don't understand.
It's 33.
Man, only 33. Fucking tragedy. You know, most of our patented cultural relevancy tests, this doesn't necessarily pass, but they're also kind of not really applicable. It's not that kind of movie. Special effects, for instance.
Oh, there's a deer.
There's a deer. It took them 5 weeks to get that shot of the deer on top of the car, apparently. It actually did. Bechdel test, definitely not. Did Simpsons do it? I don't believe so, unless there's some deep cut.
I feel like I've seen Tommy Boy
maybe
on the TV in The Simpsons. Oh, no, Black Sheep. And it's now returned to and it's David Spade running around with Chris Farley running around a beehive or something. Is there a beehive in Black Sheep?
It could be Family Guy.
Yeah, it feels a bit more Family Guy. Family Guy,
doesn't it? Classic cutaway gag.
Oh, yeah.
Recasties is not one of those movies either, is it?
It's not, but I feel like, what did Carol say? Chris Farley walks so Jack Black could run.
Yeah, well, that was one of the ones too I was thinking. I mean, there's overlap. There's definitely some differences too, but
a lot of the
roles when I was thinking what could Chris Farley have done if he was still alive, a lot of the Jack Black ones come to mind.
Yeah. And interestingly, did you see that picture? Did I send you that picture of, rest his soul as well, Brian Dennehy in his older age?
Intense look.
It's quite intense. I thought he looked like Jack Black.
Yeah.
Like Jack Black's dad.
Yeah.
Bizarrely, we'll put the picture, up. R.I.P. to that great man too.
But it's an interesting one because
we'll do him more in maybe we'll do First Blood one day or
for
Gladiator
sure.
That film, the Gladiator, the boxing.
Oh yeah, I haven't seen that one.
Yeah, we gotta do that movie.
But on the Jack Black thing, because I did think of that too in terms of probably the only recast I could think of. He's already too old for that shit.
Yeah.
So it's interesting that there's no one
plugging that gap now.
There's not this type of.
If you're out there, kids.
Unless I'm forgetting someone, I don't think there is, right?
Yeah, Jonah Hill's gone a different direction.
Even in his
he's a bit
Apatowian days, he still probably
different.
Wouldn't quite fit the bill.
Yeah. There's no like party rocker.
It's one of a kind, perhaps.
I don't know.
Yeah.
There you go. There's a gap in the market, people.
There's a gap. Get out there.
Get out there.
I alluded to what we're doing next week, didn't I, Greg? Romeo and Juliet with the wives.
How can you keep me standing?
That's how it goes. All are punished.
Yeah. We were meant to do it last year on our retreat, but we drank a lot of red wine.
Yeah.
And we didn't know where to run.
Yeah.
So I'm looking forward to watching again because I did, spoiler alert, I enjoyed that.
Me too. I think I'm always going to enjoy that.
Well, I didn't really. Yeah, we'll get into that next week.
We'll get into that.
But that's exciting. And then we're going to eat Korean barbecue.
Yeah. Woo.
Which I'm equally excited about.
Yeah. It's good. It's
going
good
into
stuff.
A long weekend.
Exactly. Easter.
It's all coming up, Milhouse.
Yeah.
In the meantime, someone asked for a better exit. So here you go. Here's me and Tristan. Oh, no, I don't have anything.
You don't have anything? A friend of the show said, hey, you need an outro that's as epic as your intro. Now, I don't know if you meant what we were saying or the song.
We just assume people are tuned out by now.
Yeah, exactly. I don't know how any of the podcasts I listen to end.
I think they say, and that's the end of that chapter.
I think they do with a scarf thingy.
I just threw a picture.
Oh, he could have played Homer Simpson on Police Cops. Chris Farley could have.
Samson.
Yeah, that works.
Uh-oh, spaghetti-o.
There you go.
Down by the river.
Finn.
Bye.